The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 30th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Kieran Mazaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence Minerals, discusses the financial and operational highlights from the final results, plus upcoming milestones. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst partner at SP Angel, talks about Amma Minerals, Blue Jay Mining, Blue Rock Diamonds, Bushveld Minerals, Rambler Metals and Mining, and Rainbow Rare Earths. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Power Metals, ECR Minerals, and Ananda Developments. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll also see lots of other content. In fact, there's an article there on Blue Star and Guild Esports. There's one there on Cadence Minerals, another Infrastrata, all done by Fran there, and Traders Capital with Zach Meir, and COVID-19 Index. Let's have a look who's the riser today. Biggest riser on that today. Tizian Life Sciences. Wow, there's not a lot of risers today. Up 1.3%, that's the biggest riser. Biggest faller is React Group, down 10%. That was down there yesterday as well, so it's a big bit of, you know, faller yesterday after the results. And closely behind that is Gfinity, so not a lot of good news out there. It seems to be drifting lower at the moment. That's summer months here, hopefully end of Q2, hopefully welcoming Q3 with a bit more liquidity in the market. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence Minerals, KDNC ticker. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
It's good to speak to you again, Justin.
Yeah, it's good to speak to you. And you've just released, which must be an undertaking, just looking at the amount of pages there, you've just released your final results for the year ended the 31st December 2020. Of course, we're now, 6 months, pretty much, to a day away from that. So it's a lot in the past, but it's good to look at what you've achieved and the operations, and we'll discuss what's to come. But as always, if someone is listening for the first time or I've never heard of you before, can you just summarise quickly what Cadence is about, Kieran?
Yes, absolutely. So Cadence is an investment company listed on AIM, as you've just mentioned. We invest in both private assets, which we believe have unique strategic advantages and will deliver capital growth to us as shareholders. And we also invest in publicly listed entities which have an ability to deliver growth to us as well. Both of those, we invest in sort of strategic minerals, whether that be electric minerals that are going to power the electric revolution, or we can see a really strong demand for in the coming years. So we have a large stake in the iron ore asset as well. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we're an investment company invested across these assets, which have really delivered well today.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's start off with financials then, if you could.
Yeah, so what we've seen this year, last year, and which continued in this year as well, is that because of the performance of our holding in EMH, which we have about 9.9% in at the moment, European Metals Holdings. Last year, we generated a net gross profit of £10.3 million, which then has resulted in a £7.8 million profit, net profit attributable to shareholders. So that was really good news. We realized some of that value in last year and continue to realize some more value in this year as we lighten the load on EMH, taking profits. I mean, you know, we have an unrealized return there of around 400%. So you think it's wise when you get that sort of level of returns to cash in some of those chips so that we can invest in new projects and, invest that capital into a mapper. So we've also, alongside that, we've been very conscious of our cost structure. So we've reduced our costs across the board down by 22%. And we've utilized the ability of having that cash available that we've generated during the year or raised capital during the year to effectively pay down our debt. We had around £2.9 million worth of debt at the end of 2019. That's gone down by tenfold, down to around 290,000. And subsequent to the year end, we've paid that back entirely. So now we're sitting with a company that's debt-free, with a profitable situation, and good performance under its all of its investments. I mean, basically, all the investments it's got have been technically successful, and they are now showing capital gains and are reaching parts of the development curve that should provide excellent value for Cadence.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and we'll go into what you've achieved this year operationally, if you could, and then we'll look ahead to what you're hoping to achieve in the next 6 months. So let's start off with what's happened in 2020, Kieran.
Well, so absolutely. So 2020 was important for us. It was about, let's look at the major project that we've been spending the most of my time, certainly, and that is Amapa. Amapa is an iron ore asset. We've talked about it beforehand. Anglo had a valuation of around $600 million on it. Our entry points are first 20% at $2.5 million, then goes up to 27% at $3.5 million, and we have a first right of refusal to go up to 49% of this asset. So, you know, when we look at what we need to achieve to get our vesting into this asset, well, what we did at the tail end of 2019, we got the railway concession re-granted. We got the JRP settled in 2019. 2020 has really been about getting some of the operational aspects started and, frustratingly, finalizing the agreement with the banks, which is the secured creditors. Once that occurs, we would have a position which we would vest our 20% and our 2.5 million that we deposited in escrow in 2019 would be released. Mm-hmm. Now, what's happened to it? Well, we reached a settlement agreement in September last year. And right now, as we stand, I know it's been frustrating for our shareholders, as it has been for me personally, even though, you know, none of the, you know, from September that last year to now, none of the terms of the transaction that we agreed with the banks have changed. They've just had, as I explained in the annual report, just internal processes to go through. We've got, you know, final documentation being circulated between the legal parties. So I'm, you know, so that's progress. I'm not going to say when we're going to get it done, but I'm just hope, you know, I'm very hopeful that we'll get it done. And once it's done, then we're on our way. And we're that confident about it that we thought we might as well get on with operations after Namapa. So that whether that be the dam rehabilitation that's ongoing, port rehabilitation that's started ongoing, recommissioning a railway study, across the board, we're carrying out activities because we believe that this is a fait accompli that just has to go through some processing with the banks as far as we're concerned. So with Amapa, that's progressed slowly as far as the legal side, but operationally, we've had to sort of start speeding things up. Mm-hmm. One of the things I do say in the RNS is that I basically, you know, we're going to straight to pre-feasibility study rather than scoping study. Mm-hmm. Reason, pretty simple. The scoping study gives an accuracy of 40-50%. PFS gives an accuracy of around 35%. And we'd rather go to PFS. It might take a bit longer to get that accuracy correct rather than be wrong on the wrong on the downside on capital costs. And also it stops us having to go through a more lengthy process, go through a scoping study, then start PFS. We're just going to go straight into PFS. And that's what we're doing right now. Also we've, you know, during the current year, we've started shipping our material, mm-hmm. the iron ore. So three of the four ships have been done. Fourth ship will get done. I think iron ore pricing is still very strong, but shipping costs are really high. So we, you know, and shipping availability for the right material at the right right ship at the right price. So we look to get that done hopefully in July. And that's our fourth ship, which will net us $10 million, or the project nets us $10 million. And, you know, hopefully from then on, we can continue shipping with an agreement signed and, our ownership vested. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's Amapa. And I think that's the main project that we've been invested. EMH, well, we've all seen what they've done. And the rest of the projects have progressed really well.
Yeah. And if you could, with a mapper in mind, map out, if you could, some upcoming big milestones you're hoping to achieve this year. Because I'm looking at the share price in 2020, it's done very well. You've gone from about 6 pence in January, of course, with that big dash for cash in March, which everything dropped. But about 6 pence in the end of the year, it more than doubled to about 17 pence. So it's, the share price is doing well, obviously reflecting operations. But what are you hoping to achieve then, milestones in this coming 6 months, if you could, Kieran?
The first one, banks. Get that one done. That vests our 20%. Then, all our studies completed and a PFS done. So that's, those are the two primary targets, and the continue of the shipment of 58% iron ore from our stockpiles, continue generating revenue and profit for our JV company or our JV company when that gets done. So, I mean, those that in our mapper, it's really simple. We're now targeted on now getting it through, getting it through to commissioning and restart some of the capital work. So 6 months, banks get done, PFS. Those are the two big ones which, shareholders can look out for, because with those two, I think that there's two big value inflection points for our investment in Amapa.
Yeah. Just quickly, I know commodity prices have done well in the last year. So what's your thoughts for the future?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at iron ore. I mean, iron ore at the moment is sitting around 262%, $214. I think the general outlook is that should remain stable from the coming quarter or two quarters, or range between $180 to $200 per ton. Reason being is that some of the steel prices are softening in China, but the demand from, it's now going away from a demand from the east to a demand from the west. The rapid vaccine rollout, the stimulus packages in the US in terms of infrastructure, etc. We should start seeing, and if we get through the semiconductor problem we're seeing with chip manufacturers, the car production will move up. And so I can see iron ore prices and steel prices being driven more by the West, more from white goods and vehicles. And when we talk about vehicles, we then go on to our other side, which is electric vehicles and the demand for lithium. Well, we've seen pricing improve, and we can see that penetration continue to increase. The only caveat I say to that is, do we have enough? We've got semiconductor issues, and if we don't have enough semiconductors, electric vehicles don't get built, and the same with the commodities. So I can see squeezes there, prices moving up generally in the lithium sector, across the all materials associated with the construction of electric vehicles, copper, lithium carbon, lithium hydroxide, cobalt, etc. And with iron ore, I see a bit more of a stable platform with demand dropping from east and demand increasing from the west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool. Excellent. Okay, well, as always then, Kieran, wrap up, if you could, with three reasons. If someone's liking the sound of where you are at the moment and what you're doing and what you're hoping to achieve. By the way, I should have carried on. The share price has continued to improve in 2021. It's gone from the low in March in 2020 of 3 pence... to 30 pence. That's close to a 10 bagger there. It's done very well. So
I think, and also you add to that is that the directors during that period have put in around 100,000. Well, I think it was about £120,000 of their own money into the company. So we've invested and put money behind that, so that's showing a vested interest. We're very much aligned with shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and that's probably one of the reasons. But three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add Cadence Minerals to their watch list, please, Kieran.
Yep, absolutely. So Cadence is an investment company. Three reasons should follow. All the investments we've been involved in have been technically successful and have shown capital growth over the last year, which is reflected on our share price. We look for strategic advantages and assets that are irreplaceable elsewhere, and so far those choices have been correct. If you want exposure to the electric vehicle sector and thematic commodities, which we believe are going to be vital for the way that we move ourselves in the future, Cadence has got an exposure to these and exposure to what we believe are some of the best projects out there. And thirdly, you know, we believe that we have assets that, you know, are substantially de-risked, given the mineral resource sector is heavily risked, substantially de-risked through a process of excellent due diligence, an active hand in operational management where we can, and therefore we can hopefully deliver, you know, capital growth in our stock as these assets progress.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff, Kieran. Good to chat to you as always. And, you know, hopefully we'll be catching up in a not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good. Nice to be back again.
Yeah, well, I've heard that someone's, you know, not getting their chips. I love chips. Do you?
Yeah. The shortage of silicon chips in the world.
Oh, silicon chips. Okay, sorry. I thought we were talking about chips.
Continues to create issues with, particularly with automotive manufacturers. I mean, it seems that the guys producing PlayStations and things like that have plenty. You know, they ordered plenty of chips at the right time. Mm-hmm. The automotive guys took a different view. They assumed that the world would be slower, that consumers wouldn't be buying so many cars. And they are left short. What we notice is that is pulling back the momentum in growth in China just a little bit. Not a lot, but just a tiny bit. There are also logistical issues. There's problems with containers in the wrong parts of the world. Doesn't seem to be enough ships to get those containers from China to the West at the moment. Hopefully that will lead to a certain amount of reshoring of manufacturing back to UK, Europe, and the USA, which I think is very necessary. We notice that the battery metals continue to bounce and rise again, which is good. Copper, nickel, tin, all doing quite well. Other metals.
So why is that? Obviously there's demand, obviously, going forward, but any particular reason why they're bouncing now?
Well, the battery metals are being driven by so many things, but the need for more soldered connections for tin, the need for more nickel for lithium-ion batteries and for fuel cells, although the demand for fuel cells is not so huge, but nickel is essential for those components, and demand for copper. I suspect that's largely driven by general consumer demand at the moment, as well as cabling for offshore wind farms. There's an awful lot of copper used in wind turbines, actually in the generators, but also for connecting those turbines back on shore. Big copper cables there. We've been trying to get more details on the tonnage of copper used, but they're certainly big, heavy cables that sit on the seabed there. So There's just lots going on, and the demand picture is still pretty robust. We've had China trying to pull metals prices back, but they haven't tried too hard, which is good. I think they realise that, you know, fighting global markets can be a very dangerous thing, even for a government an economy the size of China.
Yeah, Chinese man, go hey, the Chinese government, not the Chinese people, Chinese government, I'm getting increasingly worried about them, you know.
You should be getting your flags out, because they've got the Chinese Communist Party centenary on Thursday, and they'll be commissioning I think it's the world's second largest hydropower station in southwest China, with a capacity of 62.4 terawatt hours per year. Gosh. So we should be out flag waving for that.
Absolutely, yes. I'll be doing that, standing at my front porch there in my street in the middle of Hampshire, just waving my Chinese flag. What's that guy doing at 8 o'clock, when normally that time is reserved for, you know, clap for carers? I'll be doing that flag waving. People think, have we missed something in the diary? It was the guy over there just waving a Chinese flag. We've been taken over all of a sudden. It's only a matter of time, I think, before we will have to wave that flag. Okay, let's talk about individual news, starting with alphabetical order here. Talk about nickel, Ammon Minerals, AMC. Big deposit there, John, isn't it? But is it in a decent jurisdiction?
Well, there just aren't enough nickel counters to invest in the market at the moment, because nickel is honestly the key metal for lithium-ion batteries, for fuel cells. Nothing else is as robust within those electrochemical environments. And Amur Minerals has an enormous nickel project. That's the good bit. The bad bit is that project is in Russia, in the Amur region. Mm. Although Peter Hambro Mining's been operating in Amur for many, many years now. Not always as profitably as it should have done, but they are able to operate. Interestingly, this is classed as a strategic resource under Russian classifications, and yet Amur Minerals, as a relatively small company, has managed to progress with this project for at least 10 years, probably 15, without any great aggravation from the Russians, which is quite remarkable in many respects. Given that it's such an important and interesting project, so they've been working on the JORC resource, which, as we know, in the mining sector is a very important process to work through, because the JORC resource requires a certain amount of economic validation. You can't work out a JORC resource these days unless you know some key economic sort of numbers and features for the project, and so that all has to be worked through. So the new resource is 178 million tons at 0.74% nickel and 0.21% copper, and that's huge, and that's very valuable in this world of ours, because there is going to be a developing nickel shortage, in my view. As all these battery manufacturers get going, they're going to need more and more nickel for these batteries, and we just don't know where it's all going to come from. And there's the Indonesians are making it more harder to mine and refine nickel. And I think they said no more refineries unless people can discover more nickel resources within Indonesia. So that's going to slow things down and maybe put a few people off working in Indonesia for now, because the Indonesian government are trying to make sure that more value is added on shore there, rather than being exported off to China. Where's the new nickel production going to come from? I don't know, but I would have thought at some point somebody comes along to buy Amur Minerals and start developing this project.
Yeah, but like you say, it's in Russia. We've gone from China to Russia. But I suppose and you always get a lot of delay and issues like that in certain jurisdictions. So it's not always obvious, is it, what's going on? I mean, there's lots of delays, and you think they're playing their hand, they're trying to get, if they know it's valuable, they just want a bigger cut, don't they, essentially?
Interestingly enough, we haven't seen, I'm not aware of the Russians stealing projects off listed companies. There may be examples that I'm not aware of, but I can't think of anything offhand. If you think Island Gold has been one of the best dividend payers on the AIM market for the last 10 years, you've got Trans-Siberian Gold, Peter Hambro Mining. If we disregard the lack of performance there, the company has in fact operated very successfully in many respects in the Amur region. So there is a rule of law, and there's a set of Russian rules to adhere to. But so long as one stays on the right side of those regulations, companies seem to operate reasonably okay. It's just that the costs often seem to be higher than maybe they should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I wonder why. Why is that then?
I put it down to management, because Highland Gold seemed to have done great things over the years without incurring those higher costs. So there are good examples, and there are examples that are less good.
Yeah. Okay. Next company, Blue Rock Diamonds, BRD. What's happening there, John?
Well, they reported their results, and they reaffirmed their targets for this year and 2022. So they're looking to do 750,000 tons of throughput. That's kimberlite ore. That gives them a target of 30,000 carats this year. And in fact, they recorded a valuation of $424 a carat for the first 5 months of the year. I don't think they'll maintain that value necessarily, although diamond prices are going up. that 424 did include some bigger stones that they recovered, and maybe they'll recover some more of those larger stones in the second half this year. I mean, because the production rate's going up, in fact they should do, but I wouldn't want to sort of bet the farm on getting quite that number. But even if they do, let's say $400 a carat, still going to be a jolly good revenue number, and profits will take off. So I like this company. I think, look, it's very small. It doesn't really move the needle in terms of global diamond production, but I think it's going to be a nice little producer, and it's had a horrible few years, and it needs to get over that.
Yeah. It's odd, isn't it? Just think that the absurdity, really, and how bizarre it is that we just dig for certain, stones that have no. But do they have any use industrially? A little bit.
Oh, yes. I mean, people who dig up roads use diamond saws, diamond cutters.
I suppose so, yeah, yeah.
In industry very, very widely. And those are the little diamond, the micro diamonds that are set into things. The rest of it, obviously, the bigger gem quality stuff goes into jewellery. I know a number of people who've got engaged recently, and congratulations to those couples. And I think there's a bit of that going on at the moment, and that's serving to lift the jewellery sector.
I'm just beyond so cosmetic, I'm just wondering if there's what's the precious stone or metal out there that has very little. I know gold has a bit of use in industrial, not a lot, does it really?
Gold, yes, some industrial use. Well, in fact, gold.
What I'm trying to get at is what's the most pointless metal or stone that is. Go on.
For critical connections in aircraft, you use platinum, but of course it's very expensive because copper will corrode in a harsher environment. So if your life depends on it, you want a gold or a platinum connection, whereas everything else in the world is generally okay with copper.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what's the most highly valued, pointless precious metal or gem stone.
A pigeon blood ruby sells for more on a per carat basis than a highly valued diamond.
And it's not used for anything apart from cosmetic purposes, is it?
Exactly.
Okay, here we are. Pointless then, rubies. Cool, let's go to one of your favourites, John. I know you like your bushfowl minerals, so what's happening there?
Well, again, results coming out today highlighting what a tough year they had last year, and that can't have been any fun for management. Those numbers are not great fun to read, particularly as an analyst. But they did raise money from a group called Orion Mining Finance, so that everything has been combed through in great detail by those guys, and they've been happy to advance, I think it was $65 million. To them. So if we kind of disregard the loss and look forwards, Bushveld they continue to raise their production levels. Unfortunately, they've pulled back on the guidance a little bit, which is a bit of a shame. It would be nice if all those downgrades came at once. But look, I think I actually think it's going to be a very good company going forwards, because they've got they're building the vanadium electrolyte plant, and that's going to produce electrolyte for the new generation of vanadium redox batteries. And the world is going to need a lot of batteries for grid power storage, because if we're all going to charge our electric cars at night, when the sun's not shining, and maybe on days when the wind isn't blowing that much, then we're going to need to get that electrical power from somewhere. So vanadium batteries are being tested by lots of people around the world. Bushveld themselves are building a vanadium battery mini grid project in South Africa to demonstrate how well this works. We know that Eskom, the South African grid, has been testing vanadium and other batteries as well, because they're looking to put in lots of wind power to support and replace the coal-fired power generation that they have. And I believe there's a lot of World Bank money set aside for these programs to help countries like South Africa that are still developing but but are very reliant on coal to move on to renewable energy. So that is all happening, and it will all happen in stages, and it all takes a little bit longer than it should do, but it is happening, and Bushveld are part of that. And I hope in future years Bushveld will be the sort of Tesla of the vanadium redox battery space.
Wow, that's a big talk up there. Tesla. Is there another Tesla?
Maybe that's going a little bit far, but I do think there's a good opportunity here for sort of the full vertical integration of producing vanadium and also being part of producing vanadium redox batteries, you know, which is effectively a high-tech business, although it's not actually that complicated.
So reason why it's down again, I mean, the chart doesn't look very encouraging. It's been grinding lower. It spiked up in November, December last year, up to January, and since January, it's been grinding lower. It's gone from 23 pence to 14 pence. So it was halved, pretty much, and it's dropped off today. Is that just because of increased costs and losses, yeah?
I think so.
And smaller revenue.
They don't make attractive reading. You could forgive investors for saying, I've had enough of this. They have, of course, increased. They have given a few shares away over the years as part of various transactions that they've done. I think the acquisition of Vanchem was in fact very good, and that's working quite well. But again, there was a convertible that was given as part of that, so there's probably just a little bit of general selling pressure. But at some point, this will reverse because vanadium prices have been rising in China. And I checked this morning, and they were holding at relatively good levels. So I'm hoping that actually, at the end of the day, we need higher vanadium prices to support this business. And I think they're coming.
Mm-hmm. No, so okay. I've had a request for you to cover Rambler Metals and Mining, John. RMM. What's happening there?
Rambler. I've got some shares in this. Very pleased to see they've secured a financing package of $50 million. Now, the interesting thing about this is they don't need $50 million. We're sure they don't need $50 million unless they're going to go out and make an acquisition of some sort. So there's a senior debt agreement for $20 million and a convertible note component for up to $30 million. And we don't think they're going to take all of that by any means, because we don't think they need anything like that. But they had a problem with a collapse in the mine a couple of months ago. So what they decided was, because they've got two working faces in the mine, that actually in order to make it a more robust operation, that they would develop another two working faces. So, you know, it's a bit like pubs in a village. You could get bored of going to the same two pubs, you know, week in, week out. So having another two places to go and drink in gives you more flexibility. And means that if two of your pubs are closed, that at least you've got another two to go to. So it's a bit the same in mining, and I think Rambler has a good future ahead of it, because it's well run. It's run by Toby Bradbury. And if there are any more collapses in the mine, I think they will be, they've got the flexibility to deal with that. And developing faces in the lower levels should give them higher grades as well, which is something that will help the operation a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'd say if you're bored with two pubs going to a week, you're probably going to the pub too often. But two pubs is plenty, surely, of regulars. And you want four pubs? No, that's way too many.
Maybe not the best analogy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, and the last bit of news here is on Rainbow Rare Earths. What happened there?
Rainbow, they're continuing to negotiate with the government in Burundi. And of course, as part of that negotiation, the Burundian government have very generously suspended the trial mining and processing license that they've been working on. Mm-hmm. A little while ago, they suspended the license for exports. So the company's sitting there with 420 tons of rare earth concentrate ready for export. That has some value. I'm not quite sure what that is right now, but I see this as just part of the negotiating tactics. George Bennett, the CEO, is flying there. He's due to be in Burundi on Monday to try and sort this out. But to be honest, the Burundians have maybe shooting themselves in the foot, because we've been modeling this in some detail, and we see there's about 4 to 5 times the value in the Palabora project in South Africa than there is in the Burundian project at Gikara. So if, you know, if they're not careful, Rainbow will just sit there and not bother with Burundi, and just focus their efforts on Palabora, which is what the what our modelling is telling them to do.
But, you know, it's corrupt African government, isn't it? You know, it's ridiculous. How do they hope to? Well, they do attract. You know, well, they're not going to ever attract inward investment if they keep just playing tricks like this, to, you know, as a suspending mine and production, all that stuff, just to get money or whatever. It's just stupid. It's not the way forward. Can't they see that?
There's no sense of any corruption in this.
But why they suspend it then? Just for you said negotiating. That's not normal business practice to suspend a project because you want to get a bit more money out of it.
The previous management were employing thousands of local people, some of whom were running around with wheelbarrows to do the mining, and that wasn't really working. The costs were too high. It wasn't efficient. So George Bennett has been trying to mechanize the whole mine. He's been doing a certain amount of resource work, recalculation, and more drilling to try and turn this into a proper Western-style mining operation. I mean, he's still cognizant that you've got to employ plenty of people in Burundi. But I think the government are very frustrated because what they want is more employment. And what the company wants is more efficiency, and there's got to be a balance to be found there somehow. And I think what's happening is the Burundian government are trying to accelerate that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just annoying, isn't it? Frustrating. Cool, marvellous stuff. Is that it, John? We've covered loads there. Anything else?
Well, there was a very interesting piece of news that Rio Tinto have declared force majeure on their Richards Bay ilmenite, or that's titanium mineral sands operation.
Explain what that means, John. Force majeure, if you could.
Force majeure is when you can't supply the people you're contracted to supply. Mm. So, you know, if you'd contracted to buy a pizza from Domino's Pizzas, and they suddenly said to you, "Sorry, we can't supply your pizza," that would be declaring force majeure. So this is a problem in the ilmenite market, which in my view is a bit of a game of musical chairs. So somebody's not going to get the ilmenite concentrate and the titanium dioxide that they were looking for to make the paint that people want to use, and this means the price of ilmenite is likely to go up, and that's good for Blue Jay Mining. I'm pretty excited about that because I have a few shares in Blue Jay, and I think that's I think that's a stock that's going to go carry on going better.
Okay, I saw a quick chart on that. Jay is ticker. So is it rising? Blue Jay Mining. There we are. Oh, it's just bumbling in on the bottom. It's raised a little bit. Gone up from 9 to 11 pence, but. Okay, we'll see. All right, marvellous stuff. Marvellous. Thanks for that, John, and we'll speak you next week.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Ah, fine, Justin. I'm just recovering from what was a great night last night, you know, an historic win for England over Germany, at the knockout stages, first time for many, many years. And, they've done us proud. And one step at a time, but I think Gareth Southgate got it right tactically, and everyone said it was a boring game, but the most important thing is not to concede, and we didn't concede. In fact, we haven't conceded any goals in this tournament yet, so, you know, long may that last.
Yeah, good goalie, Pickford, isn't he? Doing well. But, it's very good. I'm not a huge footballing fan, but I'm in a WhatsApp group with two guys who are really into their football. One of them's a Spurs supporter, which you like. But, I mean, what I don't get, right, what I never get in football is why you pass it back to the goalie all the time, especially when you're in their half. That infuriates me. Two things in football, actually, is the diving and playing for penalties or fouls. I hate that when they're hardly touched at all and they act up and their faces are, and there's a chance here you could injure yourself more by diving than the actual foul itself, which wasn't a foul. So they can stop doing that. And secondly, like you had, Raheem Sterling there scoring an excellent goal, then he kicked back and nearly give the goal away. And why are you kicking back? I don't understand. If you're in their half, they can't score generally. But if you're in your half, close to your goalie, they've got more chance of scoring. So why not play, always the best form of defence attack? I don't understand why you kick the ball back, all the way back to your half. Just annoys you. Like I said, stop kicking the ball backward, for heaven's sake. It's like annoying.
Well, that's based on possession, isn't it? Because the thing is, if you can't, if there's nothing opening up for you going forward, then of course you pass it back and you basically keep hold of the ball. And all the time you've got the ball, the opposition can't have it, so they can't score a goal. And,
yeah, but they're more likely to score. Well, I don't understand the possession. They're more likely to get, if you can't break their defences, right, and they're a good team, they're more likely to score if you're in your half because you have the ball in your half. They can get it off you if you want, if they're a better team, and they're more likely to score in your half. It's just geographically, you can't argue with that. They're more likely to score in your half. Try and keep it out of your half. Stop passing it back to your half. If you want to play possession-wise, why not try and keep possession in their half? Obviously, they're a bit more active in their goal area, but I just don't say passing all the way back to the goalie or passing it back all the time. That's, statistically, if you look at how many goals are scored in your half, by the opposition, it's 99%, pretty much. So keep it out of your half. Don't pass it back there. So if you want to hold possession, try and hold it in their half. I don't understand. You're more likely to score goals as well, your side, if you kick it up towards their goal. So I just think England takes a lot of time. But the first half there, England took a lot of time and a lot of effort. They put all the effort in, and Germany had as many shots on goal. And we seem to do this a lot. I was watching Wales, and they played against somebody else, and I don't know if they played against. But they were, the other team would just whack it up there, big kick
Denmark,
up there,
Denmark,
cross the across and across, and have a goal. And I think, statistically, the more shots you have on goal, the more chances. And we would have taken ages to get it into the right position. And then, don't mess around with that. Just have a shot, get it, cross it over, get in there. Bit of speed, catch them on the back foot a bit. And I think we spend too much time, I'm not an expert, but I spend too much time trying to set up the perfect goal and then kicking it back towards the goalie. That is not the way you're going to score, I just encourage them to shoot from anywhere and just get up there, mix it a bit,
I think, but also by bringing the, taking back the keeper, you're getting the keeper involved because the keeper has fewer touches in the game than anyone else, generally speaking.
So what? He's chosen to be a goalie. If he wants him to have more touches in the game, be a striker.
But it's good to get the keeper involved in the game, and someone like Jordan Pickford needs that involvement, and he's progressed massively as a keeper. He's been superb in this tournament. But I think it's because tactically the Germans are always well organised and disciplined, and we had to match them in that, and we're not only matched them. The bringing Jack Grealish on in after 60 minutes was the masterstroke, because he then just opened them up, created the space, and was able to put two passes together, and you've got two world class strikers like Sterling and Kane, and of course they put them away. So it was great to see. It was and also significantly a very historic win for England, but also at Wembley as well. It's great for the country right now, and I think great for where we are. So let's hope we can go on, beat the Ukraine on Sunday, and then the semis, and then who knows?
I agree with that. But attack. That's all you're doing.
Attack, attack.
That's what you do. Yeah. Not passing back and getting bored. Yeah. So I'm not. I find that, unless I watch big games, but I find it quite tedious. All this passing back, it really is. It's so the diving and the passing back, so boring. I think drive me insane. Anyway, let's move on. End of Q2. Q2 hasn't been that good for me, portfolio wise. It's been a bit boring, and it's been sideways and down. Maybe I'm hoping to Q3 and 4 now will be a bit more, dynamic, a bit more upward, you know. And traditionally, the stock market gets better towards the end of the year anyway. So,
The
secret is to hold it. It just sometimes it's boring to hold good companies and do nothing, but you've got to do it, you know. And
Indeed. Well, that's very much the case. And one company I'm going to talk about now is absolutely in that category. That is Power Metal Resources. The epic code, of course, is POW, Prisoner of War. Easy one to remember. Market cap of 25 million. Shares traded size 3.4p, as low as 0.45p. I'm a holder in the company, this company has over the past year acquired a series of projects, and I'm not going to go into each one because most people following the company will know that. They currently have 13 projects, 2 projects in Australia, 4 projects in Botswana, 1 project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, 1 in Tanzania, 2 projects in Canada, and 3 projects in the United States. So all of these projects have been looked at and evaluated by Power Metals team on the ground there. They have project managers in each country, and it's all coordinated centrally here by Paul Johnson, Andrew Bell, and the team here in the UK. But of particular interest, I think what has attracted me to this company and the reason why I'm continuing to hold is because I believe they're set to deliver value on so many levels. And the first one is that they're advancing a project in Botswana, and this was actually featured in Shares magazine last week. And this is Power Metal does, it works and it joint ventures with different companies on different projects. For example, in Tanzania, it's got a 35% stake in the Haneti nickel project with Katoro Gold, and it's got various structures around the world like that. In Australia, of course, it's got the Red Rock Australasia project, which is a joint venture, 51% Red Rock Resources, 49% Power Metal. In Botswana, there's a joint venture with Kavango Resources and that joint venture is going to be IPO'd separately as a separate company, which will, of course, bring a lot more value into the Power Metal balance sheet. And it's a joint venture covering the Kalahari on the Kalahari Copper Belt, an area called the South Ganzi Ridge, where copper anomalies have been discovered. Aeromagnetic surveys and ground magnetic surveys have been conducted, along with soil sampling, and they have discovered 2 considerable resources, the Marula and the Acacia resource there, which are currently being evaluated. And ShareSmag did a detailed article on this, we're pretty enthused by the opportunity, simply because it's close by to another project called T3, which, when Paul Johnson was chief executive of Metal Tiger back in 2016, he undertook another joint venture with a company called MRD Resources turned the T3 asset into a major copper find. And that's only 35 kilometers from the South Ganzi Ridge. All of the geographical anomalies that were consistent with the T3 discovery are there and present at the South Ganzi deposit. Now, you know, that was a find that was worth many, many millions. Power Metal has a market cap currently of 25 million only, and that's based across these 13 projects. But just one of these projects coming to fruition could dwarf that current market cap. So given the progress that they've made already with the South Ganzi Copper Project, I think this company is set for a very exciting second half of the year. And also, there's a hell of a lot of news to come out of Australia, a lot more news to come from the other projects in Botswana, a lot of news to come from Canada, and of course, as I mentioned just now, the joint venture with Kavango Resources, which is Kanye Resources, that will be IPO'd separately, and that will, of course, bring extra value into the company. So where the company sits now, I think it's offering excellent value.
Here's a question for you. Is a stock, right, as in a company, a business or an idea if it's not generating revenue?
It's it's not an idea, is it? Because the
let me just describe that. Yeah. Power Metal Resources there, right?
Yeah.
The, nothing there is yet generating any revenue. Okay. Now you they've got to, because how do they start? Because that's when it becomes a business, isn't it?
Mm.
Because at the moment they're just ideas. Hopefully. To monetize, that mean they're not being monetized, are they? So it's essentially there's good ideas and bad ideas, of course. There may be good ideas, but what I'm saying is, it's not monetized yet, is it? So it's just an idea at the moment, isn't it? It's not
a business. Many companies have, okay, if you're going to call them ideas, they have one or two ideas, but also other companies and entities share those ideas. So that's why Power Metal are joint venturing each and every project that they undertake. And if you go to the Power Metal website, you can look at the projects and you can see what percentage they own of each project. And it's normally staged earning, whereby milestones are achieved, and then another investment is made, which takes them up to the next level of percentage ownership. But it's an idea. But you could say the same about technology companies. You know, a technology company with
I'm talking about any business. I'm not just Power Metal. I'm talking about any idea that's. That's it. If it's pre-revenue company on AIM, they're ideas, aren't they? Essentially, I'm just thinking about that. I've just thought. In fact, what's validation that makes it a business is when someone starts paying for that product, and then you start generating. Because I can come up with an amazing idea. In fact, there's been a couple of companies on AIM that have got, you know, sort of tech ideas, and let's be honest, they've never got any sort of demand. The demand that generates revenue. Say again.
Yeah. I mean, biotechnology—that's that's an even longer lead time, arguably, because you've got phase one, phase two, phase three. Of course, we've spoken about this before. You've got all these three different phases of trial before it's approved to go to market, and then of course the sales happen right at the end. So, but all the time it's going through those phases, the value is being added because it's got through those milestones, and it's the same principle in mining. You know, you're going through each phase, you're going through the soil sampling, the magnetic survey, and also. Given the fact that a major discovery was made by the same management team 35 kilometres away 4 or 5 years ago, you know, that's a pretty strong buy signal in my book. You know, other people might disagree, but I think if you take a look at it, read the article. Actually, Power Metal tweeted that out a few days ago, and you can still find that if you go to Power Metal.
I understand all that. In my head, I think, is it a business or is it just a business plan at the moment? That's what it comes down to, isn't it? And
that's absolutely true. Yeah, it is. But that's applied to probably well over half the companies on AIM. I would think, you know, you're talking about developing a concept, developing technology, developing biotechnology, developing a resource, a mineral resource that's in the ground, or an oil well. You know, it's all the same.
Mm-hmm. And okay, marvelous stuff. Okay, but that's POW. I mean, listen, ideas, news-driven companies generally, you know, they're either loss-making or pre-revenue. And obviously the news drives the share price, but not financials. And so, I assume that all companies strive to be financially driven, you know, and sustainably driven by profits and revenue. But until then, they're sort of ideas and news, aren't they? News on ideas.
Indeed.
Doesn't mean the share price doesn't rise massively. Some of the biggest rises of all, I've talked about, is hope, hype, potential, and news driven, because people's minds are generally more active than reality. So they this is going to be huge, and then people start buying into it like hell. So that can drive a share price massively. But if you're in at the wrong time, you've got to trade it sometimes. If you get in too late, then it can pop and drop. So cool. What's next, Al? Is it a business or is it a business plan?
Is it a bird? Is it a plane? This is a business. It's a business plan, but it's a company with £5.5 million in the bank at 21st of June. So that's a week or so ago. ECR Minerals announced their half yearly results yesterday, and they provided a summary of the highlights to date that the company's got to at this point of the year. And ECR Minerals, likewise. They're exploring for gold in Australia. There are two main projects, the Kresik project, which is north of the Ballarat gold mine, and the Bayliston project, which consists of, it's a territory where there are a number of projects, including Cherry Tree, Blue Moon, HR3, and others. And the company early this year acquired its own drilling rig has been using that drilling rig at the Bayliston project. It's hired a drilling team, a GMP Drilling, to undertake the work at the Creswick project. And to date, we've got well over 700 soil samples taken from the Bayliston HR3. They've got visible gold from one of the holes there, and that work is continuing. The company also have a headquarters in Bendigo, which is more or less in the middle of the Victoria area, and it's almost equidistant between Creswick and Bayliston. In addition, it also has another interest up in North Queensland. It's applied for licences up there, close to the Charters Gold Province, which the mines in the area have produced a huge amount of gold over the years. The company is basically fully funded for as long as, and certainly some news out last week before they announced the results. The first diamond drill hole that the team undertook or drilled at Creswick this year produced visible gold, and they're proving up the geological formations in the area, and we expect to hear further news in the coming weeks and months. The company is currently worth 18 million market cap. Shares are traded size 4.4p, currently trading at 1.9p. If this resource can be proved up at Creswick, and also once there's the holes they've drilled at the Bayliston and HR3 territories, once they've proved those up, then I think we're going to have a very exciting second half of the year, because they've got the data, they've got a huge amount of core samples that have been taken to the core logging shed at the Bendigo headquarters, and as they go through the assay process, we'll be getting these results out in the coming weeks. So again, a very exciting second half of the year in prospect for ECR Minerals.
Cool. Okay, third one. What is it? Is it another business plan, or is it a business?
No, this is cannabis.
Well, what is that?
Medicinal cannabis. On Monday,
but is it a business or business plan?
Well, it's a business and a business plan combined.
Generate money?
It's not right now. It generates money in that one of the companies is earning money from sales from the HAPAC vaping or cannabis vaping device, which is one of the investments that Ananda Developments have. Ananda, I should say, is an Aquis listed company. Those following will know this, an Aquis listed company, shares currently trade at just under a penny. The company's got a market cap of 6.5 million. On Monday, I spoke to the CEO, Melissa Sturgis, who talked to me about. She covered the investments in Liberty Herbal Technologies, which is the HAPAC vaping device. Just received approval for distribution in the USA, which is a major step for them. Also, ICANN, Israel Cannabis, they have a stake in the company there. They're a medicinal cannabis incubator. And they, you know, they're very much regarded as cutting edge within the industry. Melissa said they have an awful lot of data and intel from that company, which helps them develop the operation here. The core operation, of course, is here in the UK, which is a research facility where they are growing medicinal cannabis, and that received Home Office approval a few months ago, I asked Melissa what the upcoming news flow was looking like. She said, well, they're currently working with five strains and five seeds of cannabis, and they're working to meld them together to produce a plant that's both stable and produces a consistent level of cannabis that can be used for medicinal purposes further down the road. She said the marketplace is burgeoning. It's really growing. growing. It's the UK is being very proactive in that regard, which is a good sign. But going forward, there's going to be a lot of news in the coming months about how the cannabis strains are developing, and also furthermore the prospects for the group a little further down the road.
Mm-hmm. Well, I told you I own some shares in that. I don't know how much I own. I did find my login details for the Jarvis Investment portal.
You did.
I logged in after a lot of hassle there, and nothing in there. But I don't know where the shares are held. I haven't sold any. Obviously they're on Aquis. I don't sell them, so I don't know where they are. I have no idea.
Well, I have Jarvis. Well, I have several Jarvis accounts with TS Capital, who are my broker, and I've logged into. I can log into my Jarvis interface here, and I have some Aqua shares, and they're showing up. They're showing up there. So, if I were you, I'd get onto them and chase them up, because if they're gone, mate, you want to get hold of them.
Yeah, I don't know where they are. I don't know, but it's annoying. But they're going to be there somewhere, surely.
Sort of.
Hello. Not only are shares disappearing, but share commentators disappearing as well.
I was going to say, what was that? Yeah. It sounded like an intervention from outer space, but there we go.
Yeah. So any idea where they'd be, Al?
Any idea where your shares are, just yeah. Same place NFTs are. Oh, actually, on the subject of NFTs,
don't go down that route.
No, I'm actually looking at my NFTs on the phone. I've got my NFTs in my Wax wallet, and these are the Gibraltar currency limited edition postage stamps, of course, set up by Coincilium. This is a joint venture with Coincilium and Red Fox Labs in Vietnam, who produced an NFT counterpart for limited edition Gibraltar cryptocurrency stamps. And I've got my stamp
What's
pack
the
here.
What's the point of them there? What's the point?
Well,
are you honestly going to look at those stamps every now and again and give you a bit of pleasure? I can't see the point of that, can you? You'll probably forget about them soon.
Listen, Jess, I'm not a stamp collector, but this is my foray into NFTs. It's just like you bought the Kings of Leon album. I thought, I wanted to have a look at them.
I don't know what that is now. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, so anyway, I had to get the stamps, and I've got the stamps here, which I'm not a stamp collector, but they're here anyway. But with the stamps, I got a number, and I was able to submit that number to Nifty Labs in Gibraltar, which is the company Coincidentally I've been working with to develop this. And I received back five NFT packs. So I've got my five NFT packs, and in a couple of weeks' time, those NFT packs explode into life, and I find out whether I've got what level of NFT I've got, and there are I think 100,000 in total, and they're at various gradings. So I think it's I believe it's a random allocation. So I might find I've got a mythic rare NFT which could be worth some money. I don't know. So anyway, but I can look at them, and I've got them on my phone.
Yeah, they're not going to explode into life at all, Ali. Just forget about them. They'll be there for ages. You may see someone sell something on news headlines about NFT somewhere, and you think, "Oh, hang on, I got some of those." And you check out the value of them. Then nothing. Well, I don't understand why, but people can right click. If I go on, if I search for where the stamps are, so what are they? What stamps are they?
Okay, so if you search for Gibraltar cryptocurrency postage stamps, you'll probably be taken to a website called WOPA. Yeah. And you can buy the stamps there. You can still buy them up to, I think, is it 17th of July? Time's running out, but you can still get your allocation. So if you buy the stamps...
I can see them. So what I can do now is just I'll screenshot it, and I've got it on my phone. It's fine.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Okay, so you can...
Why should I even buy them? I don't understand why I should buy them. They're not actually pretty-looking things. They're odd things. Waste of time. NFTs, I don't know, it's a waste. They're a bubble in the bubble of crypto at the moment.
A bubble in the bubble in the bubble of, yeah. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will send you a screenshot of my
NFT. I don't want to see them.
No? Okay, well, there you go. I've just sent it to you. So that's an NFT. And of course, no, I can't, because I've actually taken my phone offline because it rings so much. But anyway.
There we are, marvellous, is that, Al? And in fact, why don't you actually put them in an envelope and send them to me using a stamp?
Yeah, I'll put them in the postbox.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers, Elvis. Speak to you next week.
Cheers, Jeff. Speak to you next week. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Caudill Minerals, down 2.7% to 0.44. At three, Rolls-Royce, down 0.12% to 98.44. At three, Avingtrans, up 1.1% to 4.27. At two, Mosman Oil & Gas, down 5.9% to 0.182. And at one, Trellis Health PLC, it's down 1.4% to 69 pence. Pretty much all down there. Let's have the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Ridgecrest Holdings and Company. At four, Rambler Metals and Mining, financing and operation update. At three, Open Orphan, annual report and results AGM there. At two, Bushveld was John covered. He also covered Rambler on the podcast Rambler. That was final results for the year. And at one, Tizian Life Sciences, Dr. Howard Wiener on Bloomberg at 1:58 Eastern Time today. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.